Hi, this is Wayne Zell, and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, your fast-paced video cast that helps you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom, and focuses on entrepreneurs and their stories and their path to greatness, the struggles that they've faced. And today, my special guest is Ken Baden. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Wayne. It's an honor.
Well, it's an honor to have you on. And Ken is a client. He's a friend. And we've been working together for a short period of time, but I've gotten to know him a little bit better. And I think he's got a great story to tell. So we're going to dig right in. Ken, I know that you've had an interesting background. Tell us about, you know, what it was like growing up, where you grew up until some transition occurred. What was your early part of your life like?
The early part of my life was very, I don't want to say Brady Bunch-esque, but it was just normal, you know, very normal with blue collar, no pun intended, which we'll dig up later. But I didn't want for much, and I had a good upbringing. And
where'd my you parents, grow up?
Waldorf, Maryland. That's right. You're in Virginia. So we're in Maryland. I grew up in Waldorf. I never left the area. Not very well traveled, but very good, normal childhood.
Okay.
Military father.
With a military father, you stayed in Waldorf the whole time.
He worked at Andrews. Rare. Yeah. Well, he was on base. He was on Andrews Air Force Base. So he was guard. Before that, he was Navy. So he did his traveling, and then he was guard. So when you're National Guard, you get to stick, you know, where you're at. One of the benefits. So we stayed there.
And then after you got out of high school, after you left Waldorf, where did you go?
I did leave for school. But
where did you go to school?
I went to school first to the University of Maryland, but I commuted. And so I literally commuted from Waldorf to, you know, College Park, Maryland. And I hated that. And I didn't feel like I was getting the college experience. And my girlfriend at the time, more importantly, my parents split up in high school. So I had a girlfriend that I had dated like middle school through high school. She became, you know, I could dig into the psychological aspect of it, but I was very much entrenched in all of things her. And so she's now in Frostburg, Maryland at this D3 Nowhereville school. I'm at Maryland.
Be careful. There are people that probably went to Frostburg that, you know, are listening to this broadcast.
I went to Frostburg. Yeah. So I left Maryland to go to, you know, previously mentioned like Nowhereville school. So I went from Maryland to Frostburg and I chased the girl there. And honestly, I loved it. I thought it was so much more fun. It was everything I wanted, man. It was like a little town that was just quaint and ran by. It was a blast. It probably wasn't the best academic move I could have made. But it was a lot of fun. It was awesome.
And so after Frostburg, where did you end up?
Like any good college kid, I suppose. I mean, I went right back home. You know, right back home and back into the mix of it. But I had gotten an internship that is how I got introduced into the true sales world. I had sold suits when I was 16, men's suits. I had done some of that, but I went to an insurance agency. And because there was an issue with an internship that I was supposed to be on base, you know, the nepotism deal there is strong. So I was trying to ride that into retirement and get into the civil service. And as is most of my family, my girlfriend's family, but there was a hiccup in the hiring process, which would have meant either I wait a whole semester and lose that, or I have my professor sign off, which he agreed to on me going to work at an insurance agency, learning sales, because I had a communications background, which was more what we're talking about here. But I guess they figured, hey, you can sell, I guess.
Right.
And that's really what started it.
And do you have a passion for sales? Do you love doing it? Or
yes, I do.
So, and you know, there were some times that you had rough times, I know. What happened that, you know, caused you to leave the insurance world? And what were some of the bumps in the road that you faced?
Well, it was actually probably a little bit before that. It was my freshman year of college. I got into a car accident, and that car accident led to, I had my right leg reconstructed. I had broken my femur in 11 places, and I lost my leg. And there was all this, you know, it was a big deal. Obviously I was bedridden for 6 months. It was, you know, it kicked my butt. And very much like you see on these shows now, what is it, Dope Sick? There's another one out recently even that came out, Painkiller. There's so much on it now.
Yes.
With the Sacklers and everything. But back then we didn't know anything. And so I was taking these pills my family, my dad, nobody knew anything was wrong. And for 3 years, honestly. And so by the time he did, he being my father, was like, hey, you're on my insurance. I'm seeing a lot of these, you know, and then I joined a fraternity my last semester. That was probably not the smartest play. And I learned through that fraternity that these could be recreational pills. And so, that made me pretty popular in that fraternity, and all it took was that semester abusing them, subsequently having my father say, you know what, man, something's going on here. You're either selling them, you're abusing them, you're done. He told my doctor. That kickstarted me going from a college student to a felon. I mean, really overnight. I mean, in one year, I went from, you know, just a normal frat guy who was just going to go and do life with this girl that he had, his high school sweetheart, and follow his family into, you know, I don't know. I had no direction, Wayne, first of all. So yes. That was just like, okay, well, I guess they'll do this because that's what her family does, or that's what people do.
Right.
No real ambition, nothing. So while what happened to me was unfortunate and it broke me apart and it cost me her and people in my family, even my own father for a while there, I was so far down. I mean, I'm talking, I did some really bad things, you know, and I did things that I was very much ashamed of, and I wasn't raised that way, but I also have empathy and just true. I understand when people now, you know, they're addicted. That's just, it's a world that unless you've been there, it's not an excuse. You choose to do those things. However, sure. Once that happens, you're no longer in control. You're just kind of like in, you're along for the ride. And I did bad things. I did crazy things. I took things from dealers because I assumed that they had what I wanted, and, you know, very much I could have gotten killed anytime, any number of those times of any of the crazy things I did. And in a year I would end up in jail trying to rob a Hallmark store. Laugh at it now, only because the likelihood that Hallmark had more than what, $20 in its register. Sure. I didn't have any, I was a terrible criminal, but that's how desperate, broken and ruined I was in that short amount of time. And it was because I just didn't have any money and I had to get what I needed. I had to get it because I couldn't breathe. I just can't explain it. However, that respite kind of got me back on my senses a little bit. Thought I could drink, went through a brief spat of alcoholism. So it was completely and utterly abundantly clear that I couldn't do anything. You know what I mean? At this point, whether it was because of that or not, it doesn't matter. I went through essentially 5 to 10 year in, out, in, out, in, out. What I mean is sobriety. I went to jail. I got a felony right after I got my college degree, which I thank God I even got because I was this close to not getting that. And now I have a felony. I think my life's over. I'm 27 with a felony. Yeah, a college degree, but I figured those kind of wash each other out.
Yeah.
And a violent felony at that, right? Like attempted robbery. I mean, you're an attorney. Ironically, my wife is now an attorney. She wouldn't have anything to do with me back then. She did meet me back then, which is really funny, but she met me before I fell apart. So it's not like she knew me. You know, it was like right on the cusp of like right after college. I had kept it together for a little bit, but I just completely fell apart. But what I'm saying is really that it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I say that because, you know, the guy that now you and I know each other very well, Wayne, and I'm comfortable talking about it because I genuinely believe that having gone through that and came out of the other side, I was kind of a punk before that. I didn't have any ambition before that. I didn't appreciate things remotely the way that I do now. I mean, not even remotely. Like, it's just when you come out on the other side of that, and now I have a business, the business, for example, I had to work.
Let me stop you there. Cause this is a compelling story to me. It's not that I love hearing these stories. It scares me. It makes me feel bad for you and your family and what you had to go through, but it's compelling because you hit the depths. What brought you out? What caused you to sort of escalate to where you are today, which is very, very successful?
The only honest response is the deepest depths. I mean, homelessness, burning every bridge. I mean, I tell that to a lot of parents these days. They want me to tell them something different. I don't have anything different. You have to let them completely bottom out. I had to be out of every option. even illegal options. Like I had to be literally dropped off by my then ex in a baseball field, which is just surrounded by woods in the middle of Calvert County, Maryland, this super rural area that has no connection to anything. Had I been in even where I grew up, Waldorf had now become good enough for me to get what I needed to and be homeless. And I was content. I was content. I said, just get me to Waldorf. I'll be homeless, live behind the checkers. There's a tube there where I can sleep with the other homeless people. You know, we'll just stand out there with our signs. And I was going to do that. And I did do that. And,
wow.
You know, I just didn't, she wouldn't give me a ride back there. And the rest, that saved my life. If she would have taken me back there, I'd be dead. If I could have gotten
Was it a realization? I mean, did you just come to this, did you snap out of it? Or how did you emerge
out
of this chasm?
I did snap out of it after I got help. I mean, the true answer, man, is just I was out of options. I walked like a zombie. If I told you the things I did that last night to get to that spot where she finally kicked me out, you would be like, oh, my God. But I'll leave it at, I'm completely beat up. Remember what I had talked about earlier, that I had a certain affinity to take things from the people that had them. Well, I attempted to do that in a house where there were several people and I didn't have a very good plan and they could have killed me. And they had every right to kill me. I mean, I essentially forced entry into there. The only reason I don't think they did is because of their traits or their chosen profession. You know what I mean? If you can pick up what I'm putting down, I don't think they wanted any police attention there. So
that's a good point. Yeah.
They just beat the hell out of me and got me out of there. But what I'm getting at is even then I wasn't done. Even then, had she taken me anywhere, she being my ex, but she didn't. She saved my life. The woods was not appealing. I walked to go to a hospital the next day because my face is out. I just was out of options. I walked to a hospital. The hospitals put me up into the fifth floor for 5 days. I was still obsessed. I was still wanting to go back to checkers. She begged and pleaded to get me into a rehab. And I remember this vividly, Wayne, her sitting there. And this is a girl that was the only person left that would even speak to me, even my whole family, not because they didn't love me, but because I was just such a liability. And she's bawling her eyes out, asking me to go into this place. And I'm pleading with her to take me to checkers, take me to, Walmart to get the things I need to, scrounge up, whatever. And she just like, why won't, and I wanted so badly to feel bad and to want to go in. And I just remember like, this is not normal having someone you care about just emptying their soul in front of you. And you just want to feel bad, but you just, all you can think about is maybe that was the moment where I'm like, I didn't feel bad. But I wanted to. And so maybe I went in. I went inside. They said they had medical detox, which meant I wouldn't be completely uncomfortable. And I guess I was just tired, man. And I gave it a shot. 2 weeks later was when I kind of was like, okay, I'm alive. Full disclosure, I never planned on coming back, ever. I had no bank account. My credit was destroyed. I had done all these crazy payday loans. I had done crazy things where people were going to be, if I go here, they might be looking for, you know what I mean? Like I just didn't plan on coming back. I assumed I was going to die. So once I kind of came back around in rehab, that's when that, moment of clarity sort of happened where
excellent.
I'm alive. What am I going to do? Basically. Yeah.
And you got married, a lawyer. I've met her. She's lovely. Today you're running a company that's a multi-million-dollar company. How did you go from the depths to the, on your way to the heights? And what is it that, how did you get into the roofing business? Because you now own 100% of a company called Potomac Custom Remodeling, which does roofing. Mm-hmm. And it's a very successful company. How did you start this up? What was the, the impetus to get you going in this direction to do this particular activity and get it started?
Windows, right around the time that I sold insurance, I gave you the cliff notes, but yeah. I had jumped into home remodeling sales, mostly windows, but windows then became roofing. It's kind of cyclical and like, what's the hot thing? Well, right now it's roofing and has been for like decade or so, but back in 08, it was windows. You may remember that there was Energy Star credits.
That's right.
Gold. And, but windows became roofing and that's it. We just kind of stopped selling windows, started selling, and then solar was the hot thing. I did that for a little bit and I still do, as you know,
yes,
I think I really like roofing the most, so that's probably why I kept doing it. I think it makes all the sense in the world. It's the literal roof over your head. Maybe the relationships and the products that I've used and developed kept me doing it. But I also installed roofing, by the way, during that period. It just so happened one of my, I'll call him a mentor just for the sake of 12-step anonymity, but somebody in a 12-step program that I was using as a mentor put me to work, but he owned a roofing company, ironically. Now, mind you, at this point, I've sold roofing for years and I went and installed. So I went from full circle selling to literally the guy up there installing. So I have all, to me, it was like, I've got all the tools now. You know what I mean? Like now yeah. I come back around. I've sold, I've PM'd, I've installed, I know everything there is, quite literally. I think and that what gave me the courage to go out on my own, because selling is one thing. Owning your own business is a different.
Well, the experience that you had in doing all aspects of the business, mm-hmm. really, do you think that has helped you grow and develop a path towards an exit?
Yes. I think that it made me much more confident, comfortable. I mean, knowledge translates to confidence, in my opinion, especially in sales. So yes, 100%.
So the company's successful, it's growing, you're adding, you know, new things. What are the things that you're doing to prepare for an exit where you have a successful sale of that company?
Reading your book, for one.
thank you. That's very good.
Connecting, building a team, getting with men like you, trying to surround myself with smarter people. I've been, I don't want to say uniquely prepared, but since this company's creation, our goal has been the same, and that's to build, scale, and exit. And so since its inception, that's been the plan. So, you know, but the plan doesn't come to fruition if you don't hit certain goals. So we've kind of been like focused more on that, but behind the scenes, like, let's make sure we're set up the way that we need to be. And then you find out perhaps that's not the case because you meet you and it's like, well, you actually need, and I don't want to give away your secrets. I'm sure your audience already knows, but the formation of this, and this is how it should be. And, you know, and
some
just
of the
make
things you're doing, like providing incentives to the key guys mm-hmm. and that are working with you, providing, you know, for a structure to yes. have advisors help you. So, you know, without, it's not a secret. There's no secret. This is a good thing that you're doing. You're surrounding yourself with good people. How do you keep them? Well, you've got to incentivize them. And you've got to pay them well, but you also have to give them some upside to look forward to so that they'll stay with you mm-hmm. towards through the growth and towards the end and the exit. And those are the things that I see you doing, which I think are really smart. What are the things that differentiate PCR from some of your competitors in the local community, in the local area?
I think our culture, core values, having implemented EOS, we're probably one of the only ones.
What is EOS? Not everybody knows that.
I'm Entrepreneur Operating System, but it's, you know, the book written by, what's his name? Traction, and then Rocket Fuel.
Gino Wickman.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's the staple. For one, I was told that it, excuse me, that it could increase our evaluation by as much as 35%. I don't know how true that is, but that was the original appeal.
Excellent. And do you guys live by the EOS, the Entrepreneurs Operating System?
Yes, very much so. In fact, we just got out of our L10 meeting, you know, 1:30, and I had lunch and then, you know, jumping on here. So yeah, absolutely. I think that's supposedly it's going to help facilitate a sale because you have private equity. You can say, hey, oh, EOS, great. It's one check mark in a possibility column that puts us closer to our end goal. So why not?
What are the areas that you need to fill in, the value gaps that you need to fill in to get to that successful exit in your opinion?
Now, for sure, high level, you know, leadership. And to your point, I'm trying to attract them by giving them a piece, possibly even as high a level as C-suite. A lot of the things that I didn't see making any sense this early on are becoming possible, I guess. I don't know, but I'm leaning on men like you to tell me whether that makes sense or not. Now I have a great network. I've invested heavily in myself over the last year, you know, my mentorship. So I have these high level folks like you, like Ryan, like, you know, all these guys that have either been there and done that and already exited. So I can say, hey, what do you advise? I spent time Saturday night with one of them and he's like, well, you know, you could get a C-suite, but rep, or excuse me, a C-suite COO. Uh-huh. But you can get a CEO, COO, CFO. And if you think they're just going to stroll in and roll your company up and do all these things great, like it may not work out that way. So you need to be prepared for that too, that it just might not, it hasn't happened that way for me. But I have a friend who had a lot of success hiring a COO early on. So I guess it's just tampering expectations and knowing both sides of the coin and having those people. At any rate, networking has been the biggest blessing for me. My mentorship, my circle has continued to elevate, obviously, in the last 6 years. But now my peers are men that have either, and women that have either exited, are exiting. I mean, that's just all the people I talk to. That's all I talk about.
I think that's
all
I think I what do. You've identified as a really smart thing for an entrepreneur to do when they're starting up a business is surround yourself with people who've been there, who've done it, or who've advised others to do it. And I think that's a really wise thing to do. You mentioned Ryan. Who is Ryan that you're talking about? He's been on the show, but just to give the listeners a little more perspective, and why has he been so influential for you?
Ryan Stuman, he's my coach, and he's how we got connected. And he's one of those, he's basically the, key piece to where he's built this amazing, he's kind of like, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, but find a way to monetize his network. And he has worked his butt off. So I'm trying not to dismiss what he started with five people. And now he's got thousands of people. And these aren't just like, I mean, these are some of the highest players in each realm at the top of their game. I'm talking already exited. One's getting ready to set. I just based on what he's worth now, it's plausible 300 million exit. I mean, and that's not made up because, you know, people are entrepreneurs are good for that, but you can do the math at the very least that it is entirely plausible they do that. And that's amazing. And I can talk to this man, Todd, tell you, it's I don't think Todd would care, right? Todd is only, I only know Todd because of Todd Price, that is, from Ryan. I only know you from Ryan. I don't know Kurt Lennington, who sold for 140 million linear route. I mean, these guys, they don't shy away from those things because these are amazing accomplishments, many of whom have similar backgrounds or at least adversary, laden backgrounds, I guess. Like, you know what I mean?
They've had toughness to deal with in their life, tough situations. Yeah. I think that's a good parallel. You know, you, Ryan, others that you've networked with and connected with, these are people that have faced massive obstacles. Maybe they were self-created, maybe they weren't. But you face these obstacles and somehow, and that's why I admire you so much, somehow you all were able to overcome them, not only overcome them, but crush them. And so you're crushing it today. And we don't have to get into all the details of how you're crushing it, but I know that you're crushing it. When you have your successful exit, which won't be long from now, what are you going to do next? And what are some of the other things that are getting you excited to do? What drives you? What is your passion?
I would say genuinely my passion. Originally, it was, I just didn't know how to put a name to it, but men like Ryan and Brad Lee, who would be very similar, they're good buddies. I watched them and was like, to me, that considered that to be like the major leagues of sales. And so I always had my eye on that. I like people, hence why I like sales. I love networking and, relationships. So I wanted to sort of monetize that and build a brand. And now that's a big thing. And it's an influencer and it's a coach and it's this and it's this. And what I don't want to do is be the guy that creates this brand and is full of it and has never done those things. So to me, the resume piece is the exit to really substantiate like, hey, here's where I've gone over the last 6 years. And Ryan says this because originally I wanted to create a group where it was like this all about helping people, not to say that this isn't, because helping people is truly, but to his point, the bigger platform I get, the more people I can help, because it can't just be all about money and stuff. I mean, it just can't. Because for me, quite literally, it won't work for me. I mean, I need a spirit. I need something. I mean, that's kind of the basis of this 12-step group that I still very much adhere to. It can't be. It's got to be bigger purpose. I need that. So bringing people up. When we exit, to your point, I will change the lives of the people in this room. I will change everyone's, and they've betting on me right now. They're betting, they believe on me. They believe in me now. Mariana's life's going to be changed, and her kid's life's going to be changed. Andressa's, Roger's, everybody in this inner circle, they're all going to be and it's going to be the happiest and coolest experience, and I'm going to want more of that. And so Blue Collar Ballers is a coaching group that I've got working on that vertical now. The Facebook group is really going crazy. It's free, so, you know, it's not saying much, but it's got a great attendance record, and Ryan and I are doing some cool things with it. You know, we're working on
it. Well, you're building it. You got to build it, and you got to invest in it. It's like any business, right? You got to start it, build it. So Blue Collar Ballers is a coaching, networking, mentoring group, which is exciting. That's something to look forward to. And if you had to say the biggest thing that's inspiring you, what I'm hearing is you're helping other people. Is really what gives you the juice to get up in the morning, the passion to get up in the morning. Am I saying that right? Or is there something else?
Yeah, I would say that's 100. There was a time when I first started, there was two companies ago, and I would pray every single morning because there was a guy that left the company that I was at as a VP to come start my first company, which was the one with a partnership. It didn't work out. But either way, the fact that he believed in me so much, and he had 4 kids, and he left that company to come start this company with me and go door to door, just me and him and my partner who now runs that. But what that meant to me for the guy where I came from, and I wasn't that far removed from that, changed everything for me to where I was like, please don't let me screw this up. Please don't let me let this person down. Please don't let me fail these people. And now I have, you know, we're still relatively small. However, the responsibility of these people and their families is not. So yeah, changing their lives and being an impact and really making them right. Like, them believing in me means more to me than anything ever. And my wife, like, the fact that she believes, she does not question any of this stuff. I'm going to go be this. And she doesn't question any of it. She's a very intelligent woman. And that means
she is
so much to me. It fuels me to make everybody right that bet on me and then change their lives and reward that. I guess it's those twofold things where I was a guy that came from nobody believing that he would even be alive to betting on, I'm going to put my family's sake on this, that you're going to do what you say you're going to do. That means everything to me. So that and my wife.
Well, you know, with that, I think that's a great ending to this segment because, you know, to have those types of values and to inject them into your daily life and your business and the way you operate and the way you treat people, I can see it. I've been part of it, and I'm really proud to know you. And I congratulate you on the success you've been able to achieve so far.
Thank you.
And I wish you extraordinary success going forward. Because you're right, it's not all about the money. It's about, to me, it's about helping people as much as you possibly can, and they'll always remember you for that. You won't be remembered for how much money you made. You're going to be remembered for, you know, the kindness and the assistance, the generosity and the values that you've lived by and will continue to live by as you grow in your business and pursue other endeavors. So thank you. Thank you for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth. Ken, if people want to know about your business, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, the business, you can go to www.potomaccustomermodeling.com. And as far as me on Instagram, there's the Blue Collar Closer. And we've got YouTube and everything else. Blue Collar Ballers is another vertical, but the baby is Potomac Customer Model.
Excellent. And again, thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth. And thanks for tuning in, everybody. Stay tuned for another special guest and educational moments on Blueprint for Wealth. Have a great week. Hi, this is Wayne Zell, and you're watching Blueprint for Wealth. And today we're going to talk about B corporations, also known as benefit corporations. And we're going to compare and contrast them to public benefit corporations, which are adopted by statute in about 39 of the 50 states in the U.S., as well as the District of Columbia. So let's turn to that. First, what is a benefit corporation? A benefit corporation is really a legal tool that creates a foundation for a long-term mission alignment and value creation that focuses on stakeholders other than just your shareholders. It's designed to create flexibility when you're evaluating a potential sale or liquidity option, and it gives a business with a mission-driven life post-IPO, post-acquisition, etc. Directors of traditional for-profit corporations and companies are required to maximize financial returns to shareholders, the people who own the stock in the company. The single focus is known as shareholder primacy, and it's a very inflexible framework if you study this carefully. It does not allow for-profit entities whose mission and impact is other than focusing on shareholders. A benefit corporation, on the other hand, allows a corporation to opt out of the shareholder primacy model and opt in to stakeholder governance. What I mean by that is a company is required to take into consideration anyone that is materially affected by the company's decision making, like the employees, your customers, the community, and the wider society and environment as a whole. Benefit corporations effectively are traditional corporations and LLCs with modified obligations and are committed to higher standards of purpose, accountability, and transparency. On the purpose side, the goal is to create a general public benefit, which is either a material positive impact on society and the environment, or it's an obligation to operate responsibly and sustainably, depending on where you were incorporated. Accountability focuses on expanding the obligations of boards of directors and the managers of the entity. A board must consider, as a benefit corporation, environmental and social factors, as well as the interests of the shareholders. It gives directors and officers legal protection to pursue a mission and vision that considers the impact of their business on society, on the environment, on the local community, on customers, and not just the shareholders. And then in terms of transparency, benefit corporations are required to report on their progress as they try to achieve a general public benefit. The reporting requirements vary from state to state, but many are required to use a third-party standard to measure their performance and annually report to the public and their customers. There's various guidebooks out there available, and you should check out the bcorporation.net website, which is hosted by B Labs, which is a 501c3 charitable organization dedicated to the proliferation and growth of B corporations. Now, there is a difference between public benefit corporations. As I mentioned, many states have adopted statutes that allow for the creation of a public benefit corporation. So if you're a regular corporation, you can elect to be treated as a public benefit corporation, but you may have certain requirements that you have to meet under state statute. To be a certified B corporation, you have to probably qualify as a public benefit corporation and then do additional stuff to satisfy the requirements of B Labs certification. And so they're often confused. They share a lot in common. They're complementary, but there are differences. On the accountability side, benefit corporations and certified B corporations, basically, the directors are required to consider the impact on all stakeholders, and that includes the consumers, the workers, the environment, etc. That's a similarity. There's no difference really between the accountability requirement for PBCs and B Corps. On the transparency front, both a public benefit corporation and B Corp must publish a public report of the overall social and environmental performance assessed against a third-party standard. Now, that third-party standard, for example, in the state of Delaware, they're not required to report publicly or against a third-party standard, but many states do require that, and clearly the certified B Corp does require that. Their performance of their mission is self-reported. And this is where they differ. Public benefit corporations differ from B Corps. Public benefit corporations, it's self-reporting. So they have an internal obligation to do this for the stakeholders. To maintain your certification as a B Corp, you must achieve a verified minimum score on a B impact assessment of 80 points. And recertification is required every 3 years against a changing standard as society changes. And availability, well, public benefit corporations are available for corporations in almost all U.S. states. They're also available in British Columbia, Canada, and some countries worldwide. Certified B Corp status is available to every business, regardless of their corporate structure, so they can be an LLC, or their country of incorporation. The cost varies significantly between a public benefit corp and a certified B Corp. The filing fees for public benefit corps vary from state to state, but they usually range from $70 to $350 extra to be treated as a PBC. However, B-Lab certification fees range from $1,000 at a minimum to $50,000 a year based on your revenues. And the reason is there's a lot of work that goes into the certification process from B-Lab, so they need to be able to charge for the certification process. And then the role of B-Lab, which is a 501c3, they help develop the model legislation that's been adopted in probably 39 states with some variances from state to state. And they also offer a free reporting tool to meet the transparency requirements that B-Lab likes to see for its certification. But B-Lab doesn't have any role in oversight of a public benefit corporation. When you are a certified B Corp and you get that certification status, B-Lab is the certifying body, and they offer access to the certified B Corporation logo, a portfolio of services that can be provided, and a vibrant community of practice among B Corps across the country and across the world. If you want to know more about B Corps, I suggest you visit usca.bcorporation.net, and it'll tell you more about benefit corporations, how they operate. And in fact, there's a great tool that they have. B-Lab offers a tool that you can insert your state, the type of entity you are, and they will tell you the requirements for your organization. So that's all about B Corps. Thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth, and I hope you got something out of this, and maybe you'll become a B Corp someday. Talk to you next time on Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell.